Welcome to The Thriving Christian Artist, the podcast where we hope you connect with God to bust through the roadblocks that have held you back for years, create the work you love, and really live the life you know God created you to live as an artist in His kingdom. I'm Matt Tama, your host. Let's get started. Well, hey, my friends, welcome to another episode of The Thriving Christian Artist podcast. You know, several years ago, I got the great opportunity to travel in Australia for about a month, and I met so many incredible people, Dee Kalock and Heather Bradbury and the folks at the Poatina Arts Community. And but one of the guys that I met at a conference that we did, it was called Co-Create, was a poet and spoken word artist named John Inglesas. And John is my guest today on the podcast, and listen, you are going to love John. I always joke with poets and, you know, him and, you know, I think about Joel McCarro, my friend Stephen Roach, who's got the Makers and Mystics podcast. I always tell them, I'm like, dude, everything you say is like you wrote it down and it's like a quote. You know, it's so beautiful. I think about, I'm like, oh, I'm just a rambling mess, you know, the whole time. But listen, John is an incredible, credible poet whose work centers around these ideas of hope, identity, and wonder. He's won so many, you know, competitions that are out there. He's been to America and won competitions. He's speaking all over Melbourne. He's creating community there for poets and artists in the Melbourne area. And I really can't wait to share his story, because the beautiful thing I love about John is that he is not afraid to go into culture right in the middle, not of church culture, but just the world, the people that Jesus loves, the people that God creates. He goes into clubs, he goes into bars, he goes into places where there are spoken word opportunities and where there are poetry slams and where there are just opportunities to share what God's put on his heart in a beautiful way. And he drops these nuggets. Oh my gosh. He drops these incredible poetic nuggets on people. And it's just like, boom, mic drop. All right. In fact, he's going to drop one on us today at the end of the podcast. You're going to love this, but I want to encourage you, listen to the podcast. It's going to be a real encouragement to learn about John's story, but then also be sure. Now, listen, don't forget this. Be sure to click the links that we've put into the show notes for John's YouTube channel, for his Facebook, so that you can listen to some of the other things that he's got out there. Man, it's going to be a huge, huge blessing, you know, in your life. So I think anytime we can listen to people like John and, you know, other poets that are out there that can lift us, this is what poetry does. It lifts us from the mundane. It lifts us from the normal. It lifts us from the typical and gives us vision for what's possible wrapped in beauty. Oh my gosh. You're going to love this interview with my friend, John Inglesas. All right. Now, before I jump into that interview, I want to take just a second and say a thank you to Danny. All right. D-A-N-I, who left me a beautiful review here on iTunes. And Danny said, practical, refreshing, and kingdom focus. Matt's podcast has been such a breath of fresh air for me. I know a lot of artists, but very few with kingdom mindsets. And so navigating the art world has often felt very lonely. Matt's podcast reminds me that there are other creatives out there on similar faith journeys, and it has often lifted me up when I felt discouraged. I love the practical tips and the down-to-earth conversations. It's been a huge blessing to my life. Thanks so much, Matt. Well, Danny, listen, thank you so much. That's why I do what I do. All right. God called me to raise up an army of artists back in 2009. And that's a huge, huge vision. But literally that means nothing unless lives one by one are being changed. And it means so much to me and to my team when we hear stories like yours, Danny, and others that take the time to leave a review and say, listen, Matt, what you're doing is making a difference. What you're doing is encouraging me. The stories of the artists that you're sharing on here, the teaching that you're giving, it encourages me. It makes a difference. And so really, it gives me the warm fuzzies. And I just love it. So thanks, Danny, so much. And listen, if you're sitting out there, you've not reviewed the podcast, you've not subscribed, please do that. That way you don't miss anything. And also, who knows, maybe your review will be one that I'll throw out here and I give a shout out to on another episode of the podcast. All right. Well, hey, I'm going to get out of the way and you are going to love this episode. All right. So enjoy. Well, hey, everybody, I'm so glad that you're with me on the podcast today. I've got a friend with me who I've not seen face to face in a while, poet and photographer John Inglesos, who is from Australia. John, I'm so glad to see you, man. Glad you're here.
It's good to be here. Thank you so much. Don't zoom in on the bags.
Now, what time is it there? Because it's like...
It is nearly 5 a.m.
God, yep. Bless America.
Going great. Okay.
And Australia too. Well, well, I'm so honored that you would get up and be with us, get some coffee after this, right? So.
Oh, yeah.
Well, listen, we had the great pleasure of meeting when I was in Australia doing a little tour and teaching several years back, and did a conference together, the Co-Create Conference, and I got to hear your work and just your heart, and man, I was just like, I don't know that I'd ever heard a poet as incredible as you, that, not to, you know, blow you up here and give you the big head, but I really was just struck by your work and have loved watching what God has done in your life over these last few years. So give everybody a little, just a thumbnail of what you do right now currently, and then maybe let's jump into your backstory.
Sure. So I am a spoken word poet. I used to be a freelance photographer. It didn't pay enough because the market was saturated, so I did something more practical. I've stepped into poetry work that is predominantly centered around the themes of hope, identity, and wonder. They're kind of the strands that sort of pull my work together. I currently go out to schools and do performances, as well as, anyone that will take me, basically. It's the kind of space where I think people are rediscovering this art form as something that is about voice and about the public forum. So I run workshops and encourage people to get in touch with their story and get in touch with their voice and find ways of sharing that. Yeah.
I think that's so wonderful. You know, I have the pleasure of mentoring so many artists, most of which are visual artists. And there's such a big leap for them to make sometimes in thinking, could I actually do my work part-time or full-time as, you know, my vocation? And I love you talking about, yeah, I just did the practical thing and became a full-time poet. I mean, who does that, John?
I will be honest and say, like, there's always been the side job of, you know, customer service and sales forever kind of thing. I'm currently also a disability carer. So, you know, I'm trying to, it does need to be supplemented, but it's awesome.
But cheers to you. I mean, jumping out like that and really going for it. I think there's a grace for all of us that comes when we step out in faith and do what God calls us to do. Did you growing up have a context of being a creative and that being a potential vocation for you?
Sure. So by way of context, creativity's always been in my family. Mum and dad met in a choir at university. I figured that I was going to be a Disney animator up until I turned about 16. So, you know, there was always a dream to do something that was expressive and creative. I think that I found my way around towards, I was bullied in school, you know, if you want the backstory. And so I had these two, the way that I put it is that I had these two separate narratives of, you know, being raised in a Christian home and having your mum and dad sort of say, you know, Psalm 139, fearfully and wonderfully made. And then I have the bullying voice and the story at school of, you know, like too tall, too serious, too wordy, too silent, all these other things. Yeah. And so poetry was my way back then, at least, of sort of going, well, where are my anchor points and how do I cleave to the good narrative, you know? I would say that sort of, if we're talking about backstory, that's the thing that informed it. And then in 2013, I photographed a book launch for a certain gentleman called Joel Macero, who some of your viewers and people who have come along to your B conference would have heard about the artist retreat.
Yeah.
He said to me, it's all good and well to have words on a page, but they need to be out there in the world in some way. And so I took to being on stage. And that's, I already had that background by way of, you know, doing music theater and singing in church and doing all that other stuff. So yeah, now I go out there and I've won some titles and I'm sharing a bunch of places.
Absolutely. I just was, as we were getting ready to do the podcast, watching some of your incredible performances on your YouTube channel and all that, and reminding myself, oh, I love this guy. I love how he how he shares what he's doing. It's just so wonderful. You said at the beginning, just to kind of revisit this a minute, that your work has really centered around hope, identity, and wonder. What is that kind of trifecta for you? What's wrapped up in that?
Well, identity would be how it is that I'm viewing myself, and what it is that God is declaring about me and over me. I believe that everyone has a narrative inside their heart, and you can try and argue politically and socially and mentally with a person, but the heart has a story. And so the way these things feed into each other would be, you know, hope would be the way in which I'm offering out into the world. If I'm offering from a place of cynicism or from brokenness or these things, then my offering will taste and feel that way. So getting to a place where the truth of God, the truth of his love for me, is the thing that's informing how it is that I view myself. And that is something that's gracious. It's something that's in process. And it is something that that is spacious. It's something that I get to grow into. What that in turn allows for me to do is to wonder, to go out there and see the world and sort of go, well, where is God in this? What is he creating out there in the narrative that's going on around me? I feel that those things are inextricably linked. And when I try and offer something, I'm not trying to necessarily turn people's views on their heads. I'm just trying to point to these little spots and moments, like, you know, vignettes going, I see God there. I see God there. I see these things that are taking place in you. Isn't this exciting? Isn't the world full of possibility?
And that takes the pressure off, right? Because I think so many people in the Christian ethos, if you will, have this, and you've mentioned this before to me, that, you know, this desire and need almost to be heard. I have to be heard. You have to understand my point of view. I've got to get this out. And the thing I love about your work and the way you present it is that it's so profound and yet so easy. And I mean easy, in easy to listen to, provocative and yet welcoming. And that's not by accident, is it?
No. It's been trying to, I think that, you know, Jesus was saying, you know, consider the birds of the field, you know, look at, you know, faith as small as a mustard seed. These are visuals that are not requiring scientific training to grasp. If it's something that a child can understand, then, you know, then it can be something that can work around in people's minds and hearts.
You know, one of the interesting things the Lord began to show me, you know, years ago, as I was struggling in my own faith journey, I think I kind of grew up in traditional Western evangelicalism, you know, so it's like, you know, as they used to say about country music, it's three chords in the truth, you know, it's kind of the same in the church, kind of church that I grew up in that don't give me a lot of fluff, just give me the rules, give me the quote unquote truth, and, you know, let's get on with it. And yet you look at Jesus, and he always talked about the kingdom in the context of story and in the context of, hey, the kingdom is like this. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. Have you thought about the birds of the air? Why do you think it is? And what is it in your connection with the Lord that drives you to story as opposed to this other kind of understanding of faith is so rules-based and so very much performance-based?
Oh, look, I mean, I feel like there are different tones of understanding, and like there are some people that literally just, you know, want the maths. You know, the what is it? You know, the Jews require miracles and the Greeks require wisdom, kind of thing. there is this idea that some people do want to say, look, show me the way the machine works, and then I will, and then I'll get in the car and then I can drive it. I want to know every single working.
Right.
And I do think there's time and space for that. I do feel that, you know, if you listen to people, you know, like people that have been speaking about this stuff for a long time, Colin Harbinson, he says, you know, we've sort of flipped the thing from, you know, what was, you know, 80% of the Bible being a story and poetry and right. imaginative language that people can step into, in comparison to didactic teaching and saying, you know, here is step 1, 2, 3, 4. I think that it makes sense if you're going to be instructional to people to sort of say, well, you know, you put the seatbelt on, then you turn the engine, and this is how you go ahead and mechanically navigate through. But it is a very different question if we're going to use a metaphor of a car, because I can. It's a very different thing to say, where would you like to go? Who do you get to journey with? You know, you can have a set of, you can have the mechanical questions to life and to faith, but it is also, it creates a whole lot more space. I tell people, you know, that when I am creating poetry, I'm making a garden for people to wander around in. I'm not telling you where to go. Mm. I'm just saying, here's room. What do you do with it? When Jesus says, love thy neighbor, like three words, so poetic, you know, but how much space is in that love? And then right. my neighbor, who's my neighbor? And, you know, all the spaciousness of things, it's creating space.
And yet space for so many, and I know this because I hear it all the time from artists, who these artists who define themselves as, well, I'm a Christian artist or I'm a prophetic artist. And that carries with it all this baggage that I have to perform and create and operate in the marketplace. In this
I need doves and rainbows.
Yeah, crosses. Exactly the whole thing. And I'm always, I love to challenge people, you know, and I love to just, like you're saying, invite them, I would say, to the mystery of the kingdom, which is this wide space with the Lord. I've often said, and I really believe this, that God cares much more that we create than what we create, because it's not about the performance of, it's about the process with. And I just love that. And I know for you, you're not just doing this in a vacuum, but you're doing this in the context of community. Talk about that, because I know that you're really passionate about creative community.
Yeah, well, I mean, I live in Melbourne, which is one of the most pluralistic and diverse ethnically, worldview, politically cities in Australia, which makes it a wonderful melting pot. And if you're going to talk about, you know, intersectionality as a topic, you know, every single person that represents pretty much any given facet is there. I have needed to learn that, you know, if I'm going to exchange in a way which is significant beyond the circle of church, if I'm going to go out into the marketplace, within that marketplace, I have needed to learn to be silent and to listen. There are people who are going to offer very, very different opposing worldviews within their art. They are going to speak with an understanding and view on life which is not hopeful or is cynical or is survivalist or these sorts of things. And I've needed to basically, I think, show up as Jesus in the room and sort of go, in some instances, cool, I'm going to be silent. I'm going to wait until I'm spoken to, you know. You have these people who are using this art form of poetry to, I call it bring the turkey, where they sort of go, here's 16 processes and all these, you know, big scientific words, and I you know, plonk it on the table. And then I come along and I sort of bring frog in a pond and sort of go, great, well, you know, here's my little dessert. And they're like, oh, wow, you know, all this turkey here, and you've brought this thing that's entirely different. And so when I've, in that respect, my language has been simple. You don't need to pick up a dictionary to understand what it is that I'm saying. And people can hopefully, you know, I don't mention Jesus dying on the cross for your sins as part of my work. I will talk about the whisper of God in creation. I will talk about, you know, the mystery of hearts and the way, you know, two dots form a line in between each other. You know, I will speak in terms that have a lot more, hopefully it's still referring to your God language, but in more trade tongue.
Yeah. Well, I think your work is a real invitation to people to thoughtfully, you know, digest what you've just said. And then hopefully, I think as the intent of the story is, that comes into our heart, our spirit as a seed and lives, right? And begins to pollute in a good way, infiltrate, if you will, everything that we're thinking and operating from. But so many people are scared of that mystery. Mm. What's given you the confidence? Because I would say you're pretty confident in this. What's given you the confidence to know that even in the middle of operating in creative mystery, you know that the Holy Spirit is there with you, operating in and through you, that He's at work? What gives you that without the outward demonstration that's so typical of what we would say is Christian art?
I think it is the confidence that partly it is that God knows what He's doing. it is not up to me to be the linchpin of the argument. When I go into schools, I ask these people, I ask the librarian, for these particular students, what's the pulse of this place? How are people feeling? And they said, "Oh, we've raised very, very good citizens, but they don't have their own voice. They're scared to cut their hair or dye their hair a different color. Everyone's very, very, cut to the shape." And so when I walk in, I ask the question, "Well, what is your language of imagination? What's the thing that makes you come alive?" I'm not going to tell you what the answer is. I'm going to plant the question.
Yeah.
I don't want to tell people, just wake up every morning, praise Jesus, and head out into the day. I want to say, well, what's the thing that makes you come alive? Because that was what they needed to be asked.
And a very Jesus thing to do, I would say. Who do you say hopefully. That I am, right?
Yeah. Because that puts the onus in someone else to do the work rather than saying, well, here's the 2x4, go for it. Right. I it's one of the things that I've endeavored to say about I say that the job of the artist is to listen to three heartbeats. You have to put your finger on the pulse of the city, put your head against the big chest of God, and then listen to what your heart is saying and speak that. There's going to be places of unison there, and I want to speak that unison. The desire of people's hearts and the desire of God is actually really close together often. The incongruence of me saying I must do this on my own, but God inviting me to rest instead. Those things, as an example, are times when, the world is incongruent or I am incongruent to God, and God, invites me into that stillness and into that place of listening again.
That's so good.
So yeah, I would offer that it's that listening to both and not just going, well, I'm working in a vacuum here. No, I'm working in a very, very big space, and it's good.
That's good. Mm. Lest people think that you're down in Australia just with a constant flow of open heaven over you, just transcribing the glory thoughts every day. What's your studio practice like? What is a studio? What is a creative practice for someone who's endeavoring and you are to be a vocational poet? What does that look like for you?
Number one is going out typically 4 days a week and getting the money doing something else entirely. That's the reality. We'll get to the unplugged and off the tree and flying kind of style poetry at some point, but no, part of what I endeavor to do when I am out there in my practice is pay attention to the things that stand out in my day. So I've written pieces about, customers that I served, and I've sort of gone, oh, that was an interesting interaction. Let me pocket that for later. When I worked in a hospital for a little while, I had to clear the plate for a little old lady. She refused to eat anything. And I was like, oh, Mrs. Bird, I see you didn't have your lunch. And she says, oh, no, I didn't like it. I said, well, what would you prefer? And so, offered the question. She sits up and says, lemon, lime, and bitters, please. And I'm like, I'm pocketing that notion that, everyone does know what the answer is, even when they're absolutely sick, but isn't that wonderful? And so being wonderstruck by the world is the intangible answer of that. More to the point, I always carry around notes open on my phone if I need to write things down as they come. I don't always have the time to let things flow, but I will hit record while I'm driving. You know, often enough, there'll be trains of thought that I just keep speaking out or writing down as they rise up. There are some mountains that aren't for me, but as things poke, you know, as things poke at my heart or as things keep returning around, I will try and at least write things down in some gibberish sense first, and then I will try and refine that.
Right.
And then when I feel it's ready, then I can offer it as art.
That's good. Mm. Yeah, I love your, I guess, just your attitude about how you approach your art in the middle of working other jobs and that sort of thing, because so many people have this idea that, well, unless I'm a quote unquote, you know, full-time artist, then I'm not valid, or unless I'm selling this much of my artwork, that I'm not a real artist and that sort of thing. And yet, as I'm listening to your story, I can see so much of the inspiration that you're receiving every day is in the context of what you're doing outside of your poetry. It's just life. Did that take a while to embrace? Has there been a difficulty with that in your own life?
Look, there have been different seasons. I feel like, I've been at this for quite some time. In 2010 was like probably like the most solid attempt that I had to go out there and like say, yes, I'm going to make it as a photographer. I'm going to say yes to gigs and get the studio and build the folio and shake all the hands. And what ended up happening instead was, you know, I ended up being physically assaulted in a club and spending 6 months curled up in a ball and eating chocolate biscuits. The reality is that, you know, the plans that I can have and my sense of going and making it haven't held sway. And God's had, you know, has been incredibly generous with placing people around me to have been encouragement that have held me when, I, you know, to let me grieve when I've needed to grieve and celebrated when I've wished to celebrate. I think at the moment now, when I head out there, I will tell people, you don't make it as an artist, you do it as an artist. You don't make it in life as an artist, but you do life as an artist. Mm. And that means that there will be times when I can say, great, this is my sole source of income. This is my 9-to-5, and this is wonderful. And other times where it's, I'm just going along and I'm being audience and I'm supporting people that are making it. I'm going to the dance stuff and the circus stuff and the immersive theater and all these other things. And I'm spending money just to keep the industry afloat, you know, not that it's all on me. Not that there's money in Australia, but then out of the blue, someone will say, we would like to commission you to, you know, do this thing. And we don't have much of a budget, but how does $200 sound? And I'm like, great. That's a week's rent. Let's go. You know? So, you know, those things will, It is about, meanwhile, you know, staying open and keeping in communication and in relationship with people and allowing that, you know, my dad says, you know, the Great Commission wasn't go and thus make disciples of all nations. The language translates as you go. And I feel that my artistry has been as I've gone. I feel in that respect that as I look back over my shoulder, then I can see, great, back there, I won this award. Back here, I opened for the National Poetry Slam in America. I scored low sevens for the entire competition. But I had the director walk over to our team saying, you guys are the Aussies and you've traveled the furthest. One of you just jump up on the mic and bring the crowd together, you know, 350 other, you know, competing poets. And I'm like, if no one else is ready, I'm ready. And so I went, you know, and that was my, that was this moment. And I'm like, great, you know, let's take this.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, that can be, I think that it's been, you know, as you've gone and as these opportunities have arisen, you know, that's when you step in and that's when the art gets offered. But the rest of the time, we're just being an artist and appreciating and taking notes and those things.
That's such a wonderful juxtaposition of this passion that you have to see the world, to quote you, turn upside down.
Yes.
And at the same time, know and trust that the Father is doing that through you as you go, as you do the thing that God's called you to do. Well, listen, we could talk all day. This has been so good to getting to visit with you in such a rich, rich conversation. You know, I love talking to poets because everything you say is quotable. It's like, did he think about saying that? Because that is really good. I mean, it's like every word is just so beautifully crafted. You know, I'm over here just
the nuggets. Spewing. Give us the nuggets.
I know, exactly, exactly. Well, listen, speaking of nuggets, when I was there in Australia, at the Co-Create Conference with you, you shared a piece called Get Up. And I would love it if you would share that as our closing on the podcast today for my listeners.
Thank you. Will do. I haven't actually read this one in a while or performed it. It's still in my head. It's good. We were not made to simply stay inside walls, to merely clock in and clock out day in and day out. We were made for freedom. We were made for story and for art and for adventure. Your life may be a small and fleeting thing, and this world is so large, but we are so much bigger than the space we take up. So wake up, get out, shake doubt off and step out into the day, out into the frame. This world is a canvas. It is being painted new every day. Don't wait for all things to be in place. This right here is your own space. So step outside, take off your shoes. Feel the earth beneath your feet. Look around you. Breathe in deep. Stretch out wide and let it wrap around you. This right now will never be the same again. Do you hear it? The invitation. The field says, run through me. The hill says, come climb me. The wind says, soar on me. The rain says, dance in me. The sun says, bask with me. The day says, chase after me. So gather your strength. Step onto your stage. Find your voice. Make your mark. Draw your drawing. Paint your picture. Cook your meal. Use this instrument. Make your art. It might not be the best thing you ever do, but make us believe you. Make your art. Today you play a vital part. So long as it is called today, you are artist, you are audience, you are art. So find your person and your place. And when you do, walk in it, run through it, sing and soar over it, rest on it, breathe, move, live. Live like it's never been done before. There's so much yet to explore. The best is still in store. There is so much more. Thank you.
Selah. So beautiful, so beautiful. John, thank you so much for being on the podcast today, sharing your story. Where can folks connect with you if they want to find out about your books and what's going on in Melbourne and your videos and all that?
Yeah, yeah. So I most regularly update my Instagram. The handle is John E Poetry, J-O-H-N-E Poetry. No one can spell or pronounce Inglesos, but we try. on YouTube, if you look up John Inglesos, my name, there's a link to, you know, most everything that I've performed recently that I'm proud of anyhow. The other bits and pieces online by way of, you know, Facebook, Medium and so on. But yeah, John E Poetry, look that up and you can probably find me.
Wonderful. Well, John, thanks. It's been a pleasure to have you today on the Thriving Christian Artist Podcast.
Thank you. Take care. Bless you all.
Hey, thanks so much for spending a few minutes with me today on the podcast. Listen, I hope it's been a huge encouragement to you on your journey as an artist. Hey, also, before you leave, make sure to hit the subscribe button so you don't miss any of the other episodes of the Thriving Christian Artist Podcast. And also, be sure to connect with me on Facebook, Instagram, or at my website, which is matttommymentoring.com. Until next time, remember, you were created to thrive. Bye-bye.